Hey there, I'm Justin. I'm a therapist, and usually on this podcast, I focus on mental health, especially through the lens of the polyvagal theory. But in this one, I'm going to do something different, which is to read and talk about a bad therapy story that I got from someone who I'm calling Cassie. I'm joined in this episode by Mercedes Corona. She is also a therapist and a good friend of mine, and she actually was the podcast co-host way back when. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Oh, and by the way, if you have your own bad therapy story, which is sounds like a lot of people do, sadly. If you have your own bad therapy story, I would love to read it or hear it. As sick as that sounds, please share it with me because we delve into these every now and then. I think it's extremely important to talk about the process of therapy, what's normal, what's not normal, so that other people who might be in a similar situation learn and hopefully can get out of it. So email me your voice recording of your story or write it out for me. It's at justinlmft@gmail.com. justinlmft@gmail.com. Enjoy this episode. Why don't you just say hello to our audience real quick before we launch into a bad therapy story?
Hello, audience. Mercedes Corona.
So welcome back. Always really happy to like
thank you.
Hear your voice, be with you, talk with you. And I know the people from way back when in the Polyvagal podcast days appreciate hearing you again. So welcome back.
Are they still around? Do you think they remember me?
Yeah. We have a bad therapy story from Cassie. Cassie wrote to me and to Mercedes saying, I started seeing a therapist in my mid-20s and intentionally sought out a Christian therapist. That detail matters later. I did learn things from him and through CBT lessened the intensity of my mental unhealth symptoms. Okay. Disclaimer stated, she says. Cassie goes on to say, first red flag looking back, he used to tease me for being ashamed to be in therapy and for refusing to tell my parents about it. He was also about my parents' age.
He teased her?
Yeah, just leave it that for now.
About being in therapy?
Yeah.
Okay.
What, just do you take anything from that? Because my first impression was like, having fun with her. For you, it's a red flag.
It's a flag approaching red.
Yeah,
color.
I got you.
It just, I mean, it's, I don't know where we're at in the timeline of treatment so far. It's, I'm assuming we're sort of in the beginning because she's at the beginning of her story. And so in the beginning, I'm not going to be teasing a person that way. I mean, let's not assume that I'm a perfect therapist either. So a good therapist, I should say, wouldn't necessarily be teasing in that way. I think once some rapport is built.
Sure.
For sure, then it's okay, but it just feels, it feels weird. It doesn't sit right.
So when you hear teasing a client, what would be an appropriate way of teasing? You said with rapport. I'm not sure. Like, I feel like there's a way that teasing can sound that's playful. I'm not sure how it would sound exactly, but I feel like it could be playful, but there, it could be like it's in that red flag kind of territory.
I think it's more about subject matter. So I think in the earlier stages of treatment and building the therapeutic relationship, teasing, I'm a very playful person, and that comes into my treatment, my service. What am I trying to say?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Clinical
practice.
So my clinical practice. And so I tend to be very playful and teasing, I think, with my clients. But I think in the very beginning stages of treatment, I think the teasing, the subject matter is going to be something light and something that, from my perspective at least, feels very obvious that I'm not actually making fun of you. It's such a playful, light topic that obviously it's just for fun. Okay. Whereas he was teasing her about being ashamed for coming to therapy, which is a very vulnerable topic. And that's, I think that's where my icky feeling is coming from.
Gotcha. All right, let's continue and see if that... icky feeling was dead on or not. He used to tease me for being ashamed to be in therapy and for my refusing to tell my parents about it. This was 20 years ago. I'm going to guess this. Yeah, in your mid-20s, are you expected to tell your parents about being in therapy? I don't think so. I don't know why that would be
a requirement.
Yeah. Okay.
Past the age of 18, I don't think you have to do it. Even before the age of 18.
Why would you encourage someone to tell their parents that you're in therapy? Like, that's kind of personal business. Nothing to be ashamed about, but like, well, yeah, there's not much reason, I don't think, to tease. She says, all in good fun, right? He would start doing things like texting if he drove through my hometown. We've crossed over into the absurd. I'm sorry. We're already here.
Okay.
Let me try it again. All in good fun, right? He would start doing things like texting if he drove through my hometown. Things like waved at your parents as I passed the exit. There's a face of aghast.
Why? What's the reason for that? Why would I, as the therapist, text my client and say, look at the relationship I have with your parent? Truthful or not, whether he's right. Playfully teasing or not. Like,
yeah.
Because I'm assuming that maybe he doesn't have a relationship with them, or maybe he knows them in kind of a passing way. I don't know. But what's the reason?
I'm assuming that he doesn't know his parents, but he knows where she lives and her. And so he's sending this. The parents aren't there, I don't think. He's just thinking about teasing her while he's driving. Mm-hmm. Like, this is going through his mind of like, oh, I better reach out to my client here and make this joke.
I think you're struggling to like make sense of it because it doesn't make sense.
We can make sense of like, okay, we get what happened. We can't make sense of, I don't think, of like, this is appropriate. This seems very inappropriate.
Why would the therapist, in, I'm just going to say the first half, I don't know where they're at, but the first half of the timeline of therapy, why would the therapist feel the need to be like, hey, also in their off time, right? This isn't like face-to-face time. It's not client time. What's the reason to text your client unless you're checking in on... If you're concerned, right? Like, oh, I was worried about the last session.
Sure.
Hey, reminding your session.
Sure.
Also, I'm passing by your parents' house and I waved at them. Ha ha ha. I'm on the freeway. No.
So we're in agreement. There's a red flag here.
Yes. Multiples. Multiple flags.
She says, side note, we spent years worth of sessions together where he would keep the conversations light to keep me from dissociating. In parentheses. Parentheticals, which I didn't even have the language to understand at that point. Okay. So he kept the conversations light to prevent dissociation. I don't have an issue with that. Personally, I think that there's definitely a place for that.
Sure.
When I'm working with clients and I'm noticing that they're slipping too much into dysregulation and they lack the self-regulation skills and maybe the co-regulation piece isn't quite there yet, I'll often just abruptly switch topics and get them to smile and then come back to whatever it was and say, hey, how are you doing now? How are you feeling? And just to kind of like balance it out. So I don't have an issue with that.
I agree.
In agreement. Cassie says, then I joined a DBT group led by him and another therapist at that office. The other therapist set me and another girl up to become friends because we would be good for each other, in quotes. For example, I became an integral support in her life. So they set her up with the buddy, friend. And then Cassie became an integral support. She became a central support in this person's life.
I find that odd, not necessarily inappropriate, but just unusual. Because I guess I'd like more information about that specifically, because did he set them up as friends and
that's what she said.
And I identify that if I'm Cassie and I'm new into this friend's life, Cassie, you are immediately this important integral person. Or did it naturally occur? Like, did they just sort of, like, he set up sort of a meet and greet and then they became friends?
It sounds like Cassie and the friend, the potential friend, were in a DBT group together. One of the providers, counselors, therapists said, hey, you guys should be friends. And kind of nudged it along. So it was kind of an artificial nudging, and then the friendship developed into Cassie being a central support to the person.
I hope that's the case. I didn't get that from the wording, but I could get there. Like, I see how that could, the leap could be made.
How do you feel about therapists doing that, though? I am against it. I'm going to take a firm stance on this one. Not in favor.
I think if I, I want to know why, but I'll state my opinion quickly. I'm not necessarily against it, but under the assumption that, hey, come to the support group, there's a person there that maybe you could be friends with if I feel like my client maybe needs extra friendship support. Mm. And then if it happens, it happens, but I'm not gonna push it further than that. I'm just gonna say, come check out the support group, it'll help. And hey, there's this person there that you might want to connect with, see what happens. I'm okay with that.
You're okay with
that. Tell me your side.
I don't think therapists should be meddling in friendships, relationships. I think it's okay to, of course, build that supportive atmosphere in a group. Mm-hmm. We could maybe encourage them to act as supports. Maybe. Or invite them to, if they want to, like, exchange numbers to be supports outside of the group. I think that could be okay. But to say you should be a friend, I think is too much, personally.
I think we're saying the same thing. Because, yeah, for me to say you and you pair up, be friend, that happened to me when I was in second grade and I was the new girl. Do you know what I mean? Like, my teacher said, here, Mercedes, this is your friend buddy. The friend buddy had to show me around school and we became friends because it was second grade and we were 7 years old.
Right, right. Exactly.
But as adults, yeah, I think we're saying the same thing. I'm not going to repeat it, but I think we're saying the same thing, and I agree with you.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard from the kids that I work with, the teens. I've heard a couple times that their prior therapist would try to connect them as friends with one of the other clients, but it wasn't like in a group. It was just, hey, I have another client I think you'd be a good friend with, and then try to like match them as friends, that which I think is definitely not okay. Because there was
like
no central.
It feels like, right. I feel like that's a little bit of a breach of confidentiality. Sort of. Yeah, no, that feels uncomfortable to me.
Okay, so me and Hope did become friends. I don't regret that, but it has been a heavy and confusing relationship for me. She was living with a DID diagnosis, dissociative identity disorder, and at one point brought me with her.
What?
Damn it, Cassie. We gotta work things this way.
You have to finish the sentence.
I'm going to. Cassie, it's the way she worded it. At one point, she brought me with her to a creepy warehouse prayer meeting. I wonder if the warehouse is creepy, or the prayer, or the meeting, or all of it, regardless.
I think all of it. All of it sounds creepy.
I'm gonna try this again.
Okay.
Hope was living with a DID diagnosis, dissociative identity disorder, and at one point brought me with her to a creepy warehouse prayer meeting where I had to hold her support dog, and in parentheticals it says a little Yorkie. I don't know why she put that.
It's important. It's an important detail. Hold on.
Maybe it is.
Let's
keep
going.
A little Yorkie. I had to hold her support dog, a little Yorkie, in a different room as they essentially tried to cast demons out of her? ? That's the second weirdest story about her dog.
Okay, look, I need to take a pause because on a side note, Cassie, you should be writing stories because
the way she writes
short
it.
Stories, novels, I don't know what, but this is a fantastic narrative. I hope that's not offensive, Cassie. I am delighted right now.
It's the way she writes it. It's getting me.
It's the Yorkie. It's the creepy warehouse. It's
and it's like in parentheses, is like, it's a little Yorkie. Like, oh, okay.
It's important for me. It's like you have to put it in there. Okay. So we're exercising demons.
Okay, that's the second weirdest story about our dog.
That's the best part. I'm so sorry, because she's holding the support dog while the demons are being exercised, and that's only the second best story. Come on.
Wait, hold up. Who's getting the demons cast out of them? Is it Hope or
I
the dog?
It was Hope.
Now I'm wondering if it's the dog. No, it can't be.
No,
okay.
She's holding the support dog while Hope is getting the demons.
Covering the dog's eyes, like, don't look.
Released. Don't look, Yorkie. That's why we need to know it's a Yorkie, because it's too cute. Look away.
Okay. Hope says that's the second weirdest story about her dog. This one is super sad. Another time, she asked me to watch her dog while she was in a group session, and then leave her in her kennel in the backseat of her car. Nice day, windows open, secure parking lot. And in a twist of events I will never understand, the tiny dog managed to strangle herself in her kennel and died between the time I left her and Hope got back to her car. Sorry to drop that bomb, no. But it was super traumatic and a situation I feel like I was in due to meddling therapists. So there's that.
Those meddling therapists.
Yeah. You know, playing friendship matcher.
It's a dangerous, yeah. It's a dangerous situation.
Okay.
Because then that's on you if you're the meddling therapist.
Kind of. It's like Scooby-Doo. It is, yeah.
Those meddling kids.
She replaced the dog almost immediately. She also never blamed me, but thought there may have been some satanic cult things involved.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know. She says, I don't know. I worry that I am painting my own faith in a bad light. I actually do have a strong faith despite all the shit I've seen. Okay, yeah. Cassie goes on to say that she and Hope are still friends, oddly enough. Though, with a few boundaries on my side, Cassie's side. Good idea. Always a good idea, right?
Always a good idea.
I was one of her bridesmaids, and her therapist from that DBT group was there at the wedding. The other therapist from the DBT group.
Oh, okay.
So there was two at the DBT group. They had two at the DBT group. So how do you feel about that? I don't like that. I honestly don't know what, if there's any laws. I don't think there's any laws about that. I would assume ethically it's probably not a great idea to go to a client's wedding.
There's no law, but there's an ethical guideline that personal relationships are not allowed between therapist and client during the treatment time and then for 2 years after, a minimum of 2 years after. So I, as a therapist, ethically would not attend. That falls into personal relationship territory. Why do I, as a therapist, need to witness my client's wedding? I can hear about it later. If there's anxiety about it, we can work through it ahead of time. You know, there's no reason for me as a therapist to attend the wedding.
So I'm with you. I don't think it's a good idea. I think ethically it doesn't seem like a great idea. There's a whole bunch of confidentiality issues there. I think if the client's like, hey, I understand and I still want to invite you, legally it's not an issue. Psych Central says it's acceptable behavior. So CPH insurance says generally there's no requirement that a therapist or counselor attend. Well, duh.
Right.
We should feel free to respectfully decline. So on the other hand, it is this writer's view that attendance at a significant event in the patient's life is generally permissible, lawful, and ethical if handled appropriately. I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
The confidentiality issue. And like, I just personally don't cross over that line into my clients' lives.
What's the professional reason to attend? Because as therapists, we always have to have that in mind, right? Is every action that I take, every behavior that I do in the world, in the presence of my client, should be in service of my client as much as possible, as much as is realistically possible. Every word that I use, every face that I make should be in service to my client somehow.
Yeah.
Why is attending a wedding, like, how does that fall into that category?
That's a good point. I'm
not saying it's an impossible thing. I think maybe possibly there's a good justifiable reason. I just can't think of one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't see why, like, it's nice to be invited, I suppose, but I don't see why a therapist would say yes to that personally, even if it really means a lot to the client. Maybe if it's like we're inviting two people and you've meant a ton to me, I don't care about confidentiality, and still it's like, I don't think I would. Okay, so we agree on that. So Cassie says, back to my therapist. So that was the second DBT
therapist.
That's
right. That was...
Uh-huh. So now she's saying, back to my therapist.
Okay.
He eventually blurred the lines of client/friend, which I felt responsible for at the time. He invited me to attend a prayer meeting at his house and meet his wife. So this is interesting because it's... I don't think it's okay, personally. But it's, does the religious aspect of things play into this? Does that make it okay somehow? I don't personally think so, because it's still a therapeutic relationship.
Right.
If it was a pastor, counselor sort of person, that might be different. I don't know.
That's different.
It's still therapy, though. So no matter what belief system we're bringing to therapy, it's still therapy. So inviting someone to your house to meet your family, it doesn't seem right to me.
Right. I agree. 100%. Okay. It just, again, more of the same, I think. What's the professional reason? There's no ethical reason I can come up with on the spot that tells me that it is okay for me as a therapist to invite my client into my personal life now, my home, my family. There's no reason to cross that line. That is a very, very clear line between client and therapist.
I agree. Yeah. I don't do much self-disclosure, but that's like extreme. That's like...
That's very extreme.
That's not just disclosure. That's
into your life. It's crossing the dual relationship line to me.
Yeah,
I think so. And I think the faith, the religion thing is one thing, right? But I think there's ways to infuse faith into treatment without having to cross that line.
He invited her to a prayer meeting at his house and met his wife. She says, "I brought a friend for backup to that one, and it wasn't as intense as the warehouse basement meeting." Oh, was it basement in the warehouse? I didn't get that.
That's why it was creepy.
It wasn't
and the
as
exorcism.
And it wasn't as intense as the warehouse basement meeting, but also uncomfortable for me in that season of my life. I quit therapy in time, and my former therapist stayed connected via social media and an occasional text. You are shaking your head. And making an X
why?
With your hands.
X. Why are you connecting with your client on social media? Unless it is a strictly therapy-focused account where it's like, "Hey, I am Mercedes the therapist, and join me for my wise words and inspiring thoughts." But other than, I don't know, though. See, I'm thinking about it, and it's like confidentiality lines, because if this client is on, then how many of these other people are client? It's icky.
Yeah, even if it's a professional account, if you're interacting with someone on that in a way that confirms or indicates you're the therapist, you're breaking confidentiality. If a client of mine messages me, I can't confirm or deny that I'm their therapist, you know, on these platforms. I would probably just send them an email and say, "Hey, don't do that," or "You probably shouldn't do that."
Yeah. Stop it. Knock or it I won't acknowledge. Yeah.
Therapists and clients should not be having a social relationship on social media unless it's 2 years after the relationship and the therapeutic relationship has ended. That might be different. That's different.
Right.
I still don't.
That's.
That doesn't seem right to me still, but.
Yeah.
I think it's more okay. But then texting, I don't know why there would be an occasional texts. If I don't hear from a client, I might email them, maybe text, but email and say, "Hey, I haven't heard from you. Do you want me to keep you open, or should I move you into like inactive status?"
Right, but that's just following up on treatment. Yeah. That's just proper professional protocol, as opposed to checking in and saying hi. And I mean, that's sort of the feeling I got from the texts.
I don't reach out and like invite them to creepy basement exorcisms or anything.
No, right.
That's a no. Through text. I wouldn't do that through text. Maybe an email.
Maybe an email invitation for an exorcism.
Maybe. So Cassie goes on. She says, "Before I moved out of the country, I reached out to him, afraid to be making such a big move away from my support network. We met once in his office and a second time in his offsite office where he brought me dinner. Not creepy if he had only been a friend. I had just found out my dad had cancer and he was being kind."
Maybe she was saying, he brought me dinner, not creepy. Like maybe that was an aside.
I think so. So the wording's a little, it's text, so it's hard to hear it. I can't hear it. It's text, Mercedes. So I believe it's like.
Silly me.
Yeah. I believe it's like, it's not creepy, but then she says, "if he had only been a friend." I'm not quite sure how to make that work, but I'm hearing it as like, "Don't worry, it's not creepy. I just found out my dad had cancer and this guy was being kind." Yeah, it's a kind act.
Yeah.
Is it a therapeutic act? Is it 2 years after the therapeutic relationship has ended? Why are you meeting offsite.
What is an offsite office?
I don't know what an offsite office is.
There's an office. Maybe a person could have a second office or a backup office. What is an offsite office?
I would assume, my assumption is there's an office like in the church somewhere. And then there's another office that he also uses, but I don't know. I'm making stuff up. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are.
You caught me. You got me. Oh, she's saying it's not creepy if he was only a friend. Like he's saying if he was just my friend, this wouldn't be creepy. Like, yeah. And I agree.
So implying that it was creepy?
Because he's not just a friend, it was also a therapist.
Okay, so now that I feel like that changes it for me. Yeah. If that's the interpretation of the words. It does make sense. I think it made sense before, but this also makes sense.
Okay.
I'm still going to stick to what I was saying. It's not the most ethical, I think, act. Yeah. But it's also not so far over the line that it's not getting one of these for me. It's not getting the hand X.
Yeah.
Because, maybe he was just trying to be kind.
It's hard to say that was bad or creepy. I don't think it's appropriate personally. Yeah, it's nice, I guess. It could also, when I first read it, it was like, what's going on here? Like, it seemed like it was not just a kind act, but also like a relationship-y kind of act.
Crossing the line. Yeah.
Okay, so.
But see, now with your interpretation, your second interpretation, I'm a little weirded out, but okay.
Let's see what else she says. Let's
see where it goes.
Okay, she says, we exchanged WhatsApp contacts. That's a no. It's a double thumbs down no for you. What's up? No. Not feeling it? No. I don't think WhatsApp is confidential.
I don't think I need to share my personal contact information with a client.
That too, yeah. Okay. Well, so they're not clients anymore, but it's still within that range of time, I think.
That's right.
Even if it was over 2 years, I think now. I don't like this.
It still feels icky.
We exchanged WhatsApp contacts so that I could reach out to him if needed from anywhere in the world. And I did call him one time in a moment of crisis. Don't like it?
The part that I don't like is that he seems to have such poor boundaries that he made this okay. I don't blame Cassie for this at all.
No, I think
if Cassie was still in a place where she felt like she needed that support, just sort of like a lifeline type of a thing, that makes sense to me. But then I think he should have been clear about those boundaries and said, look, if you need a lifeline, I'm here. And then under that context, it feels a little bit more appropriate. And she said she was in crisis. She ended up using the contact because she was in crisis. She needed that connection. I just feel like his boundaries are very poorly defined and loosey-goosey is the professional term there.
It seems like it's clearly like crossed over into like he just wants to be friends. Like
like
I was your therapist, but now, hey, we're just chit-chatting.
I don't want to lose. Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, like I don't want to lose the connection.
Right. So nothing wrong with having friends and making friends, but when you're shifting a therapeutic client into a friend relationship, that feels really that's not right. That's definitely boundary issue. It's not egregiously like evil. It's like we've had some pretty bad therapy stories, but it's just like, it's a boundary issue so far. Okay, let's see where else it goes. If it does, we exchange WhatsApp contacts. Moment of crisis. Okay, during one visit to the States, it's the United States, Mercedes. I don't know which one, but during one visit to the States, she might have seen or visited multiple states.
It must have been one of the 50. One of the 50, I think.
Probably. During one visit to the States, he invited me and a friend out to dinner with himself and his wife. She asks, and we had moved to actual friends, but friends where he knew deep personal things about me and I was generally uncomfortable. See, there you go. Yeah. How do you...
She's feeling uncomfortable, it's not okay. And he needs to know that.
Yeah.
And I'm clapping into the microphone. It's not okay. If she's feeling this way, it's our job as therapists to define those boundaries and to sense that discomfort, because then we need to make it okay. That's what the job is. Even after treatment is over, I'm still the therapist because I was in the past.
I think so. I couldn't imagine becoming like friends with a client. Even afterward, that's not the relationship. It's not a friendship. It's a professional service. You know, I can't imagine like chit-chatting and hanging out and sharing about myself. Yeah. I don't get that. I couldn't put myself in the headspace of where like I'm a friend.
Well, and again, she's feeling this way. And even if she didn't say anything outright, I feel like that would come across somehow. If a person is being observant and diligent about, I guess conscientious is the word I'm looking
maybe,
for.
Maybe, yeah.
Or just being conscientious of the other person, then
yeah,
they'd pick up on it. Like, he'd pick up on it. And
yeah.
Yuck.
You know, one would hope. One would hope. Okay. She says, prior to my move back to the U.S., that also means United States.
The States.
Yeah. They're also, it's the States. It's also known as U.S., sometimes USA. Sometimes just America. Prior to my move back to the U.S., I connected with an amazing therapist who sets clear boundaries and respects my fears. And Mercedes is
imagine.
Elated.
Imagine that.
She's using what? Her elated emoji.
Oh my gosh. Star eyes emoji.
Star eyes. Sets clear boundaries and respects my fears and does not want to be friends in real life. It seems like Cassie's okay with that. She's okay just having a therapist as a therapist.
Imagine
that. She says, I stopped accepting phone calls from my former therapist. Cassie, way to go. Although
Cassie with the boundaries.
It's Cassie with the boundaries. There you go.
Cassie. See? Yeah.
So she says, I stopped accepting phone calls from my former therapist, although he does still like most of my Facebook posts.
Mm-mm.
And
block him, girl.
Comments on some of them. She says, I've had to lie to my parents who have asked about who this guy is, and I say I met him in a Bible study. Nicely done. You do what you got to do. But like, this is exactly why you don't friend people.
Yes.
IRL or on Facebook or the Instagrams or whatever. You know,
yes.
You don't, this is why. It's exactly why.
I mean, okay. A person can friend people, but a therapist shouldn't friend their clients.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
I was just clarifying.
But yeah, this is exactly why. And Cassie, in her infinite wisdom, she gets it.
That's awesome.
It might be because she's in my courses and community.
It could be. That could be it, Justin. Insert ad here. It's awesome that Cassie was able to do that. I think that's a difficult position to be in as the client, with a therapist who has such poor boundaries and is making it okay, right? Okay in quotation marks, like is making these poor boundaries okay. And she realizes, A, I don't like it. It feels icky. And B, it is not okay. And C, I'm going to put a stop to it. Get it, girl.
Mercedes, thanks for coming on and talking about bad therapy. This one was obviously a boundary issue, but not egregious, I don't think. What do you think? On a scale of
not egregious,
non to very.
No.
How egregious was
not,
this?
Not very. Lower level egregious. Still icky, though. Just icky enough with the boundaries to be like, ugh.
Yeah,
no
inviting,
me gusta.
Inviting to home, trying to matchmake with friends, which apparently was successful. They're still friends. And then
I don't
bringing
know.
Dinner
I still don't like that.
I don't like it either. I don't like it either.
I don't like the whole thing with Hope because it felt like she was, to me, I was picking up on Cassie possibly feeling obligated almost to be in this friendship and obligated to provide the support to Hope. And that's the part that I'm not clear about as far as like how much he pushed her into it. I don't like it.
So a lot of major boundary crossing, luckily not egregious like we've talked about, not super egregious,
right.
But definitely an issue,
right.
Definitely an issue. And Cassie, thank you for this. Mercedes, thank you for
yes, thank
coming
you,
back.
Cassie. Of course, anytime, Justin.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that you got something out of it. I hope that you and your therapist, if you have one, or your coach, or whoever the heck, I hope you have a fantastic relationship with really healthy boundaries and that you're getting what you need. But if you haven't in the past had a good experience with a therapist, let me know. Send me a voice recording or write it out for me. Email me. It's Justin. lmft@gmail.com. I think it's really important to put these out there and to normalize or abnormalize some therapeutic practices so that the next person doesn't have to go through them. But anyhow, thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.
Always in character. I think it's fine. That is, it depends on which character you mean, I suppose.
The rapscallion character.
That's the right one, yeah. Rapscallion. Isn't that a fantastic word? I think we should bring that word back into the vernacular, the everyday.
I'm on board. Yeah. Let's do okay. it. You and me, we're going to pilot that. I kept it anonymous. We'll just make up a name. Probably you, Sally, already.
Sally.
Okay, so let's make up a name.
You've never done a Sally before?
What?
You've never done a Sally?
That sounds weird.
Probably. Don't be inappropriate, Justin.
It's not this kind of podcast.
We're just getting started. Don't be a rapscallion.
Hey, nice job.
Hey.
It's okay, so she became an integral part of the friend's life, who we'll call Sassy.
Just to be clear, you said Sassy?
Yeah. Let's not do that one.
Sassy and Cassie. Yeah. Is what you're saying.
Just happenstance.
Okay.
Let's call her Hope. All right.
What a rapscallion.
Boom.